There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's going on, all my woods people? Sitting here on a rainy day, getting ready for some Thanksgiving stuff. We got a couple turkeys in the house, mainly KC. And we got some bucks on the wall, man.
You know,
more coming.
You know what's funny about turkeys is that we associate turkeys probably mostly by shooting them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what a hunter thinks about, but a non-hunter or your average person thinks about turkeys first with Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the second most common thought about a turkey is?
Sandwiches?
That could be true. Turkey meat, eaten.
Goofballs.
I think it's bowling.
Bowling?
Because you get a turkey if you get like three strikes in a row.
Oh.
Isn't that what it's called?
I've never done that, so yeah. I don't know.
So I bet you there's a lot of people that think about turkeys.
Yeah.
When they think about bowling.
You think when they think about a actual live turkey, you think most people think it's white?
Joe Biden does. Did you see his,
no.
His stupid, you know, that's a thing that the presidents do every year, pardon a turkey.
Yeah, that's
know?
Right, that's right.
I would hate to think about the millions of tax dollars it takes to make that happen. I'm not, yeah, think about it, you know. If you think about, like, think about Jeff Bezos, how much money he makes per second,
mm-hmm.
right? So no matter what he's doing, it's, like, costing money if
yeah.
he's not working.
Sure. Yeah.
So, and
man,
the US
how much is the U.S.
worth?
Government making a second?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's costing a lot.
Cry. Okay, anyways. sorry to take us down that path.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is Turkey Day.
It is Turkey Day.
Turkey Day.
Well, yeah. Y'all got some, where y'all getting y'all's turkey from?
I don't know if we're eating turkey.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't,
countercultural.
I don't really like the, Thanksgiving turkey application too much.
Gotcha.
I like smoked turkey legs pretty good. Mm-hmm. I usually eat the red meat. I'm not a turkey breast guy, at least in that sense. I love turkey breasts from wild turkeys, frying it up. Mm-hmm. It's the best nugget you'll ever have. Mm. Like, oh, I got. Mm. I did a little freezer clean out yesterday. I got 3 breast lobes in my freezer.
Wow. How'd those get by?
I don't know. Oof. I think one of them is, I don't know what it's from. It might be a few years old, but it still looked pretty good. It's vacuum sealed, so
yeah,
it's doing pretty good. Man, about to eat some of that. That's for tasty. Sure.
Yeah. We're getting our turkey from Marshall's.
Ooh,
pretty excited about that.
Was he smoking it or?
Think so.
Yeah,
yeah, but not this one. But the next Thanksgiving I have. So, yeah, but I actually am low on Thanksgivings this year.
Me too.
So I'm glad
it worked out. I didn't get invited to one of them.
Perfect. That's what's fixing to happen for you a lot. It's
that's
just
right.
Not being invited to
that's
things,
right, man. You know, well. I ain't got a paying job like working for the Cowboys, but it worked out well. I was gone. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It's always screaming hot in that house.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Dude, people, they like turn the heat on, get the house up to 70, which is too hot anyways. And then all of a sudden there's 26 people and 1,100 square foot. Yeah, exactly. Like, why is everybody hanging out on the front porch? Just because that's how it always is. Any older person's house you go to, though, my grandparents are that way. You know, they just, I guess you get old, you get a little thin-skinned.
That's why I'm hot. So cold all the time, man.
Man.
Old.
That's it. we actually are on a hiatus at the moment, I guess you'd say. From hunting, we've hunted so much this November.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great blessing.
Yeah,
and now we're at home for a few days to kind of do the family thing. And I kind of have said I'm not gonna push too much to go hunt, you mm-hmm. know, because it'd be home with wife and kids some.
Yep,
but
feels good to as well.
It does rest a little bit.
Yeah,
which my house is all sick, so. Rest is relative.
Yeah.
But
we got a few sick too.
Yeah.
Everybody's sick right now from what I understand.
I know, man.
But I've been getting some good rest too. Went to bed. I probably got like 9 hours last night. So, but the night before, not so much, but you know, like it's nice. 'Cause I've been doing the, probably like 9 o'clock to 4:15 mm-hmm. wake up deal for, it's just like, I need 8. I can go without for a while,
mm-hmm.
but I've been going at without for a while. So if I don't get it, then I just continually get more and more just vertigo, pretty much, mm-hmm. is what it is. So, yeah.
Well, that was the hardest adjustment coming home this past week was I've been going to sleep at like, you know, before 9
mm-hmm.
and getting up at 4. And then your family isn't on that schedule, and you're not changing their schedule to meet your needs when you come home. So, by the way, you just get to be real tired for the last 2 hours of the day.
Yeah.
And then also, you wake up real early
when I know,
there's
dude.
Nothing else to do. So, but I'm kind of back on the normal schedule. I got sick when I got home, too, so that kind of helped in a weird way. Is
lots of sickness,
like,
man.
I need more sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got some more hunting to do for sure, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to do the family thing, the Thanksgiving thing, and enjoy it. I promise you. But we're going to be back out in the woods pretty soon. And
that's what I was going to say a while ago. Is like I kind of told myself I wasn't going to push, and then now between trail camera photos and seeing bucks last night, like across the fence from my place, I'm like,
it's a little different when you can walk out your backyard and hunt 200 yards.
It is.
You know, like it's different than leaving and going somewhere overnight, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that, you know, that is helpful. Plus, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, you're just on your own land, man. It's cool.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
But, you know, we do have a good podcast actually today. I think an interesting topic that KC came up with, I think it's going to be pretty good. Talk about kind of some of the things we've been seeing and doing and some of the things that we potentially will do in the next couple of weeks. And then also maybe this stuff is something that can help you be successful. But the idea is putting yourself out of the game to be in the game. That's kind of the idea. And so
weird.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But there's a couple of different concepts we want to talk about. There's a couple of different hunts we want to talk about. I guess first off, I'll just kind of tell a story, quick story of my Oklahoma hunt, which was I don't even know how long ago now, but not very long ago. It feels like forever, but I don't think it was.
It was less than a week ago.
Yeah, it was pretty not too long ago for sure. So, went to Oklahoma, still had lots of rut in action. At the time, the bucks were definitely cruising hard, looking for does. Some of them were kind of, you know, if they found a doe that was receptive, they would lock down pretty well. And basically, long story short, I was hunting, I was hunting like in a way that was basically spot and stalk, hunting some, decided to do more hunting of open country, especially in the mornings. Mm-hmm. I had thought that I would do more evening sitting in like funnels, but honestly, there's so much pressure, so many people around, and it was making me not want to go sit in a place that potentially somebody had been sitting, messing mm-hmm. up, or was sitting, you know, upwind of me 200 yards or whatever. And it's just like every like obvious place you would like to hunt had a truck pulled in, parked at. And it's mm-hmm. just like, man, this is just a struggle. And you and I work really hard at this, and oftentimes we're able to come up with something because of the effort put in.
You know what's funny? How often that come up with something comes after like 6 to 8 hours of despair.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's yeah, like
you're about done with it.
Yeah. You're like forced into a corner and you're so mad and mm-hmm. sad and everything. And then like the epiphany happens.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. You know, if you're teaching your kids something that's valuable, in my opinion, creativity and problem solving are about as top notch mm-hmm. of a skill as you can have. And that's something my parents taught me to work at for sure, especially the creativity side. And I can tell you're the same way, you know, and I think that is very helpful. So if you're not a very creative guy, it's something you can work on. It's actually something you can get better at. And same with problem solving, which most of you guys listening to this thing are probably pretty good problem solvers.
Well, I think that a lot of people stifle their creativity by calling things dumb ideas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, dude, think back to December 30th, 2021. Like, how dumb does it sound to hang in a tiny little tree next to a water trough in the late winter?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah. If you don't tell yourself it's a dumb idea, and then you just say, you know what? I think it might work.
Yeah.
That's kind of stuff pays off.
Yeah, for yeah. sure, man. For sure. I mean, I think that's something, you know, for most people, if I'd give a tip, that's something to work on, man, mm-hmm. is creativity and problem solving, kind of stepping out of the box a little bit.
What can you do, like, not hunting application to help you be creative?
Draw pictures of deer.
Yeah. That's what you did when you were a kid.
Dude, that's what I did. Yeah, I don't know if that's – I mean, that's just – I'm just throwing some stuff out. But, like, there are all kinds of stuff outside of hunting that can help that. I mean, I have written songs, hundreds of songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's, like – that's something that has helped my creativity. But, like, anything you can do that makes something out of thin air mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Yeah.
And you know what I was telling my kids last night? Like, it's one of those, you know – in the Bible, you see Imago Dei, which means created in the image of God. We're created in God's image. And a big part of who God is, in my opinion, is a creative person. I mean, a creative being, right?
Like, yeah, he's the most creative. He created all this out of nothing.
Yeah, everything out of nothing, right? Yeah. And so, and then he also has created a redemption path for us as well through Jesus, right? Like, that's a creative thing. It's actually so creative that nobody in Hollywood has ever topped the story, but they keep recreating it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, keep recreating it. This, as like, an illusion.
Die for your friends kind of thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The hero. I tell my youth kids this stuff all the time that, like, that it is. You know, if you listen to this podcast long enough, you know we're believers, right? So, like, if you don't believe, I'm sorry. It's the truth, okay? But, like, everything that is not of God is something that works against God, okay? And that is a futile fight, but it's still out there. And Hollywood is just that. Hmm. That people don't understand it, man. The great delusion of, like, the story of the Christ is so unique. So what is Satan going to do? He doesn't want to be a different God. He wants to be like God, right? The mm-hmm. the seven eye wheels in Isaiah, I think, right? Isn't that where it's at? Where as for Satan, hey, I want to be like the Most High, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what's he going to do? He's going to create all these stories that sound and try to make the the redemption story not as unique and special as it is, mm-hmm. right? So every single time you see this, like, oh, great story of this person, you know, getting the Purple Heart. No offense to anyone who has a family member, right? But mm-hmm. you get what I'm saying, like. That's just Satan trying to lessen yeah. how great of a story the real thing is.
But it should point you to God. Yeah. It should say, like, this is an awesome being that has a purple heart. Mm-hmm. Think about our creator.
It's a typology, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. So, kind of cool. But anyway.
What were we talking about, deer hunting?
Creativity. creativity. if you... You know, that is a characteristic that I think is important mm-hmm. to bolster and to be a part of, because it is a quality of God, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking about that, like, that's something you should work on often, I think, and you can do it in a lot of different ways. And guys who are, like, there's a lot of, like, blue-collar dudes that would never go to an art museum. Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of, you know, dumb or
EG.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. but... At the same time, like, those dudes are creative every day in a welding shop yeah. or whatever.
Well, that's
you
what
know.
I was going to say a while ago. I think, so, I was a GT kid. I think you were too, mm-hmm. right? Like, they point out that you have, like, a creative thing or something about you. If you weren't, it doesn't mean you're not creative. It's kind of weird. But one of the things that growing up is that was kind of fostered with me. But I would say that one of the things that made me more creative was being a carpenter mm-hmm. and being a framer. Because, like,
figure out how to fix everybody's problems.
Yeah. Then you end up, like, all of a sudden you built this house and you're trying to put up the purlin rafter, and then, like, things aren't fitting right. And then you have to figure out where it went wrong or, like, how to make a certain yoke a right way to make it still work. And, like, that's some of the most creative dudes I've met probably can't formulate a sentence on paper. You know, yeah. like, I'm serious. Like, mm-hmm. just because you're not a well educated person doesn't mean that you. Sure. aren't creative, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So I think there is some exercises you can do with that. And, you know, if you're wanting to be creative to kill deer, maybe you look at Onyx, you look at one of your most valuable pins, like one of your favorite stands, and you say you have the wind direction thing turned on, you know, and then you could go around the compass rows, say the wind's coming from each direction, and say why it does and why it doesn't work on that wind. And then you could say, look at the property, and then write down every scenario of how you could hunt it and make it work.
On every wind.
On every wind.
Yeah, it's a good yeah. idea. Yeah. No, that's a good exercise. I think I think that also battling, this is obviously not what I like doing, but it's almost a battle when you – when you have so many people hunting in an area or on different public or whatever, like battling that pressure of people causes you to practice being more creative. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of years you do that, probably not going to be successful.
Oh, it's a real good way to go not see anything.
Yeah. I mean, and even years down the road, you still probably not going to be successful, honestly. But, like, you'll get better at finding some sort of little niche that you can go hunt and feel decent about.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. So, the concept of the overlooked spot is a very, like, popular thing, but an actual overlooked spot is way more rare than just a bad spot.
Yeah.
I see a lot of guys hanging bad spots thinking they're overlooked spots. I've done it too.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's like, oh man, I'm 100 yards off the road. Nobody's going to.
Yeah. It's also because no deer go there.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's an oasis of desert, yeah, essentially.
Right.
it's just all irony, man. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that, you know, for me, that was one thing that really came into play when I was up there in Oklahoma. I was hunting a, you know, area with lots of people. And so I ended up deciding that instead of, like, putting myself in a hole where somebody else potentially could have been, I would do a little more visual stuff, and I would try to see what are the deer doing? What can I learn from them in areas where I can kind of see them better? Mm-hmm. And so I ended up in this area, and like I said, I was going to turn this into a long story short, but we ended up going off on a tangent there. The long story short is, we're creating a spot here that nobody else is hanging out because it doesn't look very good from the road, and it doesn't look like a whole lot. It doesn't look like the best part of this property on a map. Mm-hmm. But I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? I'll look a little more detailed into this. Oh, yeah, if I walk a mile in, then I'm working with some stuff.
It's a good way to like make yourself creative real quick.
Yeah,
is to just be a mile in, and then all of a sudden you feel pretty creative because there's no dudes.
That's right. Dudes don't want to be a mile in. There's no other way into this particular part of the property than walk a mile.
Yeah, and now I'm talking about straight line miles.
Oh yeah,
too. You start looking at your tracker on OnX or whatever, and it's like 1.6.
This is something that if you ever hear me talk about distance, I'm almost always straight line distancing. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't wear a watch that tells me how far I go, and I don't put my tracker on very often. So you'll never hear me say, oh, we walked 15 miles today, because, I mean, yes, technically we would have up and down and all that. But, like, I'm always just going with the straight line pretty much, just because that's – I don't wear a watch, and it doesn't tell me how it works. So anyway, we go a mile in, and as soon as we get down there, dude, we, like, first spot, we stop. It's kind of hard because this stuff is open, right? And – you don't know where to stop, where you know, you need to be able to see stuff, but you also don't want to be seen. So anyway, we flushed some ducks off a little pond, and, I think that there was a deer bedded by the pond because he stood up and was looking at us like 30 seconds later. We just saw him looking at us standing there. So we got busted. Nice buck, very nice buck. And then, I was like, dadgum it, you know, and I think he went back in and just bedded, but he still knew we were there. And then I see something up on the hill, and it's a doe. She's kind of acting weird, and, you know, I'm going to keep trying to do this long story short thing. There was a buck with her. Nice buck, I could tell. So we make a move down. Wind's blowing kind of out of the north, so we're going to try to swing around to the south side of them a little bit. So we've got to go through these, like, little draws along the main draw here. And we're kind of going up and down. We get to, it's me and Michael's videoing. We get to a point where we can see the buck, and we have this heads up decoy. So we sit down on the side of this hill, show him the decoy. He's about 150 yards away, and he acts like nothing's going on. And this is a point I'm going to make later on when we start talking about more of that out of the game to be in the game stuff. Mm-hmm. But he acted like he's just going to sit there and think about it for a little bit. Like, that's what he was doing. But he didn't act like he paid much attention to us. But I know he saw us right off the bat because he looked at us, right? Then he started licking on this little tree, and then ended up, he starts coming at us up this little draw from the main draw. And so I'm like, all right, here he comes. And he's about to do this. I'm like trying to figure out how I'm going to hold this decoy and get a shot at him. And, you know, can Michael help me out and all this stuff. Well, then he kind of walks behind the next point down to the south, and I'm like, he's going to come down the other side, the other hill of this little draw, and try to wind us at like 70. And I'm like, I ain't letting this happen. So when he started coming, I took my quiver off because I want to make a good shot, especially if I'm going to shoot a longer shot, which a lot of times that happens out there. Take my quiver off, set it beside Michael, go across. And I was going to shoot anyway. I decided when he went downwind, I'd go across. Well, I'll leave my quiver with Michael. Didn't think about it. I was just trying to get over there and make a good shot. He never shows up. I'm on the top of the other hill next to these plums, and we're looking back and forth at each other, like hand signaling. And he's like, I don't know. I don't see him. We're just back and forth. Finally, he goes, hey, I see him. He's down. He points like down in the bottom or whatever. And then Michael just finally starts walking over to me. Well, in case you didn't know, my quiver's over there. Michael's not bringing my quiver. I hadn't thought about this yet, okay? Because I'm thinking about what's he about to tell me. He tells me that they're working down south. So we're going to go over this next ridge and back down to the next little draw, right? And so we take off. We walk about 40 yards, and I go, my quiver. I don't have my quiver. And he's like, you want me to go back and get it? Well, at this point, it's like 120 yards probably, and back over the hill, and things are happening quick. I'm like, nah, I just got to make a good shot. I mean, just what it boils down to. So we take off and we go down there. Long story short, again, we get down into the bottom, and we're kind of walking around the end of this little draw to the main draw. And I had seen a spike come down into the draw to get into the mix like 10 minutes earlier. And I see the spike at like 50. And he's looking right at us when we come around the corner. So I just drop down, put the heads up decoy up. He starts walking he, long story short, he takes a second and starts walking
start
to
us. New money.
I'm going to keep saying it because I'm trying to make this. I'm trying to.
That just means there's a lot more there.
There's a lot more there. That's exactly right. And so he comes at me and starts walking to us, and all of a sudden we're sitting there, Michael's videoing, and a doe blasts through, like from right to left across, like out of the little hill that I can't see around, and I just seen this spike right in front of the spike, just takes off. Running, and I'm like, oh, dadgummit. And as soon as she comes through, the buck that we were trying to shoot comes through even closer to us. And I'm like, set the decoy down. He's looking over at her. When I set the decoy down, this is all happening very fast, y'all. I set the decoy down. I think he might have seen that out of his peripheral. And so he kind of like turns and stops and is looking at us. He's like broadside. And I learned this from KC, but I pull my rangefinder up and I hit him with the rangefinder as he's looking at me. I have decided, y'all, that I'm not going to rush stuff, because what you can do on the ground is you can get into a panic mode and rush stuff really bad on the ground because you are eye level. They see you most of the time if you're in open stuff like this, and you want to get a range, but you don't because you think you don't have enough time and he's about to split and you need to just draw instead and you're going to guess it. And it usually doesn't turn out well.
Guessing on the ground is a bad thing.
It's hard, dude. Yeah. So I, instead I've decided I'm going to try to be responsible about this, even though, full transparency, y'all, the more deer that we shoot, the better it is for us. At the same time, I don't want to taint what hunting is to me, right? Mm-hmm. For one, or for other people, but especially for me. And I don't intend to shoot 10 deer a year. It might happen one year, but if I shoot 10, I feel like it won't be quite as special the next year, maybe. So I'm okay with shooting like $4 a year, $5 mm-hmm. bucks a year, you know? I decide. This is just me. This is personal. Like we've talked about before, ethics is kind of, it's what you decide it is.
Yeah.
I'm not, if you want to shoot 10 deer a year and you get juiced about it, go do it, man. So anyway, I hit him with a rangefinder, 47, kind of through the grass, but I can see him pretty plain. I feel like I'm not, I don't know. It doesn't feel like I'm hitting grass, 47. And I put the rangefinder down. He's looking at me the whole time. And I clip on. And this is happening real fast, y'all. And I hit him with the thing that I've learned from KC recently, like 10 days before, maybe.
I learned it that 10 days before.
Yeah. And this is why hunting with somebody you can trust, like, or at least talking to somebody you can trust in the deer woods can give you a lot of cool information, right? Well, so I decide he's not just going to probably let me draw back and not just flip out. So right before I draw, I go, literally that quiet. I mean, it was really quiet because I didn't want to just flip him out, mm-hmm. but I wanted him to know, and mm-hmm. they can hear well, so it doesn't take much. So I give him that little real quiet, and at the same time, I draw back, exact same time. Well, I'm like 47. I can make this shot. Y'all seen the 50-yarder on the Kansas buck. I feel good about it. I'm locked in. I'm solid, and I'm not going to shoot it unless I am, and I am like dialed, dude. Pull the trigger. And it's going really well. It's on, mm-hmm. it's on the money, right? And it keeps going, and then it keeps going, and it ends up hitting low, like the back of his back, like his front leg that is furthest back, and it would have been literally probably in the heart if I had hit about 3 inches higher. Hits the back of his leg. And I don't know. I was like so sad because it felt so good. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's just not, I've been practicing out to like 95 yards this year. And so he takes off up the hill. Long story short again, I don't have another arrow because my quiver is 250 yards away. He takes off up the hill and kind of gets back down in the bottom through this grass. I can see his antlers, so I take off back and I leave Michael and I run to get the quiver, and I come back, you know, however long later, all the does are gone, the buck's still there, but he's like around this hill, and Michael didn't know for sure where he was, but I found him. We take off through there, and I basically, because I have hit him, I don't think that it's a fatal hit, honestly, but because I've hit him and given him some sort of laceration.
You also hadn't watched the footage back at this point in time to really know where you had hit him.
Yeah, I knew I hit him low, and he had a little limp. To be like, this is not fun for me to tell y'all. So I just, please don't think that I'm just doing this so we can make a podcast or whatever. I end up, because he's hit, I take another shot at him just because I'm trying to get him down at this point. I feel like if you hit a deer, you should probably shoot at him no matter how far, if you can make a pretty reasonable shot, because I mean, trying to get him down. And so I shoot, he's far, but I ranged him, got a shot. By the time the arrow gets there, he has hit the floor and turned out about 20 degrees. So
it's a good way to know he's doing pretty good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So, anyway, we watched the footage back, and this deer, I think I calmed him down too much.
Yeah.
You know, because
he was expecting something to move over there. So
we have it shot in slow motion, 4K. It's like killer footage, y'all. And whenever the bow goes off, he flinches like he's going to duck, but he didn't duck. He just flinched and stayed where he was at. If he'd have ducked, it would have been a smoke, dude. And he didn't duck. And I think that's like, hey, I'm a deer and I'm here.
My Kansas deer didn't move a muscle when I shot.
That's right. And he was 30?
30, yes.
Yeah, which is a jump in distance.
Yeah, that's the toughest distance there is. Yeah.
So, anyway.
When it comes to jumping, at least.
Yeah. We searched for a good half day. There's no blood because of where I hit him. There's really just not going to be any blood. He's running like crazy. And we searched even the opposite direction of where I last saw him going. I mean, we searched for miles, basically. Walked a bunch of stuff. Could see a lot of it, too, because, like I said, it was open country. And never found him. And so, I don't know. Not fun at all. Not fun. Everything was fun until then. But literally, it's just like when I told you about the South Dakota buck. Like, when you hit or when you shoot a deer and you know it's not a good shot, and you're probably not going to find him, if you have that immediate realization, you like turn into from this huge anxiety, adrenaline beast into like an adrenaline dump that's so fast that it like makes me nauseous. And I have to like close my eyes for a second and like deal with that pain. It's the weirdest thing, man. But that's the way I felt as soon as I hit. Michael thought I smoked him.
Yeah, I bet he did. That in 2018 when I missed that deer on the ground, I remember you just lay down on the ground.
Yeah, it's a weird deal, man. It's such a like fallout. And and anyway, that's kind of my story there for the Oklahoma deal. But
well, it really is like sad because that's a very nice buck.
Yeah, he's a big tall
pretty,
eight.
Yeah,
just
good looking deer,
stud of a deer. Like Michael did a killer job on the footage, and we may release that. You know, here's another thing, full transparency. We like to be very transparent on the podcast with you guys. But, like, you know, I have a buddy who recently hit a deer and couldn't find him. Searched for 600 yards, followed pretty good blood, went across a private landowner that gave him permission to look, and never found the deer. And it's happened a couple times in the last couple of years. Well, he was telling me, man, it's just embarrassing because, you know, everybody's out there just killing deer right now in the rut. And it's like, I came back with, well, who's killing deer? Instagram people? Because they are. They hunt a lot, and they're going to show you the deer that they smoke.
Yeah, it's hard to post the deer that you wounded.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, guys, is like we've always had this stance of like, we want to show you the good and the bad, because the bad is what happens most of the time, honestly, with bow hunters. Like people who don't get to shoot much, who work hard for a living, and they get out 5, 10, 15 days a year, and that's about it. They're not making good shots all the time. And that's just the way it is. Game departments account for this stuff.
And that's why it's archery hunting.
That's right. And so that's why also it takes 125 to make a record book archery deer, not 170 like a gun. You know, it's a less effective weapon. And, you know, to be honest, that happens a lot. I've heard so many stories of people losing deer this year, and it is on us to an extent, but also this is something that's very special. It happens very sparingly when you get a shot at a buck that's a big buck with archery equipment, and you work really hard for it. It doesn't matter how hard you practice. When the adrenaline happens and things, you know, there are blackout moments for lots of people. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing because it's a fun time if it makes mm-hmm. you know, when it makes that, when you make it happen. So anyway, I just want to say that we've always tried to put this stuff out, but I just know that we are thinking about this for sure, whether we want to show it on video, because there's so many people out there that will just absolutely no mercy rage you. There's also a, you know, portion of the population that probably doesn't need to see it. So, you know, hopefully they're not out there seeing that stuff. I mean, randomly we get people that do end up seeing us shoot deer that are anti and they don't like it at all. So it's just something we have to be very careful about. If you have any thoughts about it or whatever, feel free to message us and we'll take your thoughts. But I would like to show it because it tells people like, hey, these guys are humans and this mm-hmm. stuff happens to us more than you think probably. But at the same time, people don't put this stuff out because of lots of the reasons I've already mentioned. And it's not fun to have people just tell you, you know, go to heck.
It's funny how many clean misses you get to see on media.
Yeah, that's right.
Clean miss.
Yeah.
It's like, well, the margin there's like between clean miss and like smoke is pretty sizable.
Yeah.
You know, a couple inches each way. So it's like, yeah. how many of those were in there?
Yeah, how many in that were only missed by 3 inches?
Yeah, there's a couple takeaways there. If you're hunting a spot that's like, you got a target buck, you know, and maybe that's your one spot to hunt, you know, it probably pays off to be patient and make sure, like, you know, if you hunt this deer a lot and don't pressure him too much, you might have a sub-20 shot at that deer at some mm-hmm. point in the year. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I learned a lot that day.
Yeah.
And to the point where, like, I do feel confident next year if I want to go back to that spot mm-hmm. in a different way of hunting that would probably get me a 20 to 30-yard shot as opposed to 47.
Dude, sub-30 on the ground hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
That is a hard thing to make happen, mm-hmm. especially in open country.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if you're like in out east in some thick stuff, you know, but
at
the same time, like, it's a real good way to get surprised by a deer.
I know, dude. I know.
So one nice thing about the more open stuff is that you see them and can kind of judge what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's give and take, man. Mm-hmm. But like, that's the story for you on what I've been dealing with in Oklahoma, and then basically came to Texas and did three or four days in Texas as well. So, you know, there's not a whole lot to talk about there. I did pass a couple of really close bucks that I was just not sure about. It's not that I would, want it to be any different, but if you shoot one that's close and you video all your stuff, everybody's going to give you the old question mark, you know. So, anyway, we let some deer pass, one that I really did not want to let pass. So, anyway, Texas was fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and you've spent some time hunting Colorado and Oklahoma, and we've kind of developed some thoughts about this whole thing and some of the things that go down, like, post-rut, you know.
Yeah, so throughout this season, we're always trying to, like, learn the new thing that helps us. And it's like probably one of the reasons that y'all listen to this podcast is to learn. You know, that's what a lot of people try to do with podcasts. And actually, probably not. Y'all probably just laugh at our accents a lot. But if you are trying to learn some stuff about deer hunting, because we do get to hunt a lot, and that's why we do this, is so that, like, maybe it'll help y'all learn from some of our experiences and we can all be better hunters. But, excuse me, one of the main things that we're learning, or that I've learned recently, is that you can take yourself out of the game and it actually makes you a better gamer in moments later. Okay, so, like, there's a couple different instances that I want to use to kind of explain this, or Tyler and I will, but one of the main ones, and kind of one of the ones that got me thinking about this, was that Tyler has been doing some hunting on public and here in Texas, and has noticed that, like, the bucks move very wind directionally, like, exclusively right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they are always walking with the wind in their face. No matter where the proposed bedding is or food source or whatever, they're going to come in with the wind in their face. So you need to possibly, say, like, you got a scrape, right? Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, oh, I'm going to hunt on this scrape and shoot a deer. Well, it's real hard when deer are making, like, loops to get the wind in their face to hunt stuff like that and kill a deer over the, like, destination, whatever mm-hmm. that, you know, say you're on private and you're hunting corn. You know, you got a destination right there. You think you're in it because you got corn at 20 yards and the does are chill and you're going to shoot a buck. Well, he's going to, like, not only get downwind, but he's going to walk a loop around that thing to get downwind. So, you might think that a just off wind works good for you in that situation, but if that sucker makes 270 degrees around that corn pile or around the scrape or whatever to come into it, there's a good chance that you're going to end up upwind of him in some sense of the matter. So there's really very few ways to circumvent this, and about the only way, and this kind of bit me in the rear a few years back on a corn pile, but it can work.
Well, okay. It also, to give you an excuse there, mm-hmm. or a thought, I guess, it is dependent a lot of times on how much pressure the deer have. Mm-hmm. And when I was on pub in Texas, you and I were talking about this, but they just, you're like, man, they just know to look up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of they those do. Places.
We've hunted all over the country this year, and, like, I hunted a place earlier in October that didn't have a lot of pressure in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and they still looked up.
Mm-hmm.
And nowhere else in the country. I mean, in Colorado the other day, we had does and little bucks underneath us at 15 yards, never
mm-hmm.
looked up.
Mm-hmm.
We're only like 12 foot up.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the difference, is like the pressure makes those deer check the wind yeah. when they come into a scrape mm-hmm. or when they come into corn on Texas private. Like, if you're hunting a small property and your neighbors all hunt and stuff,
mm-hmm.
then deer are probably going to come in, you know, that way. So
they know too, dude. Like, I feel like a mature buck is going to eat mm-hmm. and he likes corn a lot. But I kind of think, especially like looking around in my little neighborhood over here, they're going to go check like three or four of these places they know there's corn and smell them. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't seem safe, they're going to not go to that one because mm-hmm. they know there's other places too.
Yeah.
Like, they're good at it.
Yeah, they are, dude. Mm-hmm. And they're hard to kill. And you know, I think you're getting to the point where you've pretty much got to, like, play for that J hook or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
so the thing to do in that situation, say you have a destination food source or a scrape, or maybe it's even doe bedding on public, like, maybe you don't set up so you can shoot at the destination. You set up 80 yards downwind of it, assuming that that deer is going to, like, what would you say the comfortable smelling distance for a deer is when he's trying to scent check something? I feel like it's like 50 yards.
Yeah, I mean, that's also dependent on how much pressure probably, but yeah, like,
and how much wind there is and yeah, that sort of stuff.
We set, so one of the places we were sitting that got scent checked on Texas Pub is this buck, shooter buck, good buck. Y'all probably see this video soon, hopefully. Comes in to this area, and he's like probably gets to, he's like going, like, say the wind's out of the north, he's going like east, so trying to get, you know, downwind of this area.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably gets to, like, I didn't see, I guess I've only seen the video, but I can kind of tell. It looks like he gets to about 60, maybe 50 before he, like, turns and heads north and feels pretty comfortable about going into the wind there. So
50 is the radius that deer got to.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of where I feel like if we'd have been set up, which we did the next morning, it was tough. But if we'd have been set up, you know, 50 yards south, he would have walked into our laps pretty much.
So the concept here in this scenario is to not be able to shoot to the destination, but instead shoot that radial circumference which is fancy words. Let me say that different. Shoot the circle that the deer is going to walk around it. The buck is going to walk around it. And that might put you actually in the game, even though you're like looking at deer that are 60, 70, 80 yards away for most of the morning.
You might be able to, you know, it depends on what you have, risky you want to get, but you might be able to sit 30 yards from the scrape and shoot 30 back behind you and just shoot him before it gets to your wind or whatever. So, I mean, there's options
but
for sure.
In a spooky East Texas situation, a lot of times that wind is real variable.
And so the whole time we were there.
Yeah.
It's like 2 mile an hour or less. Literally, most of our hunts were 1 to 2 mile an hour winds.
It's like you almost don't call it wind, you call it drift.
Yeah.
You're sent drifts a certain direction. Yeah. And a lot of times it's a 90 degree or more.
There was one morning where we're supposed to have a northeast out of the northeast heading to the southwest, and we had two bucks come through, a younger one and a older one come through at the same time, and they are northeast of us, and they wind us on a northeast wind.
Yeah. It's weird, huh?
Yep.
Weird deal.
Yep.
When you're down there, how far back were you hunting down there, Tyler?
Over
2 miles.
Yep.
How did it feel packing in all that stuff?
Well, it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
I will say I got some pretty light sticks this year. You do too. And then we've also got the new Cruiser Mini Seeker platform, which is tiny and super lightweight and surprisingly comfortable for a big-footed dude.
Substantially different than the regular Seeker.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like a little bit smaller.
Yeah. I didn't know if I'd like it or not. I do so far. I still have some hunts to do in it before I fully make up my mind as to whether I'd like the full-size one or the Mini, but I definitely can make plays out of the Mini and do what I need to do, you know? And I don't know, like, walking 2 miles is not the funnest thing ever, but with Greg Latham, we can walk it real fast. it wasn't super heavy. That's another thing I told Greg, you know, I was like, man, this pack that I'm wearing right now with everything in it, add a GoPro, extra batteries, and a big camera and a camera arm and base. That's what we used to do when it was just you and me.
Yeah, self-filming.
Yeah, self-filming. So it's
by
tough.
By the way, heavier sticks.
Yeah, heavier sticks, heavier platforms, whatever. But we've
sometimes
made
just tree stands.
Yeah, stands.
Yeah.
13-pound tree stands.
Golly.
Yeah, with a big old buckle that you put on the tree first to hang it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like we've come a long way, and I think those new Mini Seekers are pretty key when it comes to hunting way, way back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I know we're kind of wrapping this point here, but a thing that I think is something that you can do in this situation, think of it as private or public, right? Mm-hmm. Public, maybe scrapes or, you know, trail, like a perpendicular trail crossing or something, or private, maybe corn or whatever, who knows? I think that you can use, we've been using the Moultrie Edge cams and the base cameras a lot. They're a cell cam from Moultrie Mobile. And, you know, you can put this, like, say, on your corn feeder or corn pile or whatever. And you made a good point earlier not to put it too close because it gives you a perspective. You get a wide field of view, and so you can really get a better picture of what's going on. So, you know, put it 30, 40 feet off, you know, or whatever.
The effective range of those things is like 90 feet. That's with optimal batteries and everything working good. Kind of half that and maybe take a little bit more off, and you get about 40 feet. And that's, you're going to, if you put that thing 40 feet from the scrape or the corn pile or the trail or whatever, I think, for the destination purpose is what we're talking here. So let's just say scrape or corn or food source, whatever. Like, you're going to be able to see direction of travel from all directions.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, one of those places that you're hunting down there, we have a camera and had a really giant buck come in from straight behind the camera walking towards the destination. And if the camera hadn't been off of that, we would have not really known where that deer came from. You know, it's pretty bad. I've seen this before, and I've done it. You just put a camera on a corn pile, you know, say like we're in Kansas or something, and all of a sudden there's just a big buck on the corn pile. Like, oh, gosh, giant buck. But then you don't learn anything about what he's doing, where he came from, where he went.
Yeah.
And that's really what matters, you know, because, like, guess what? We're in Kansas. There's going to be some big bucks around. So, like, we kind of already know those are there. So, back off. Maybe you don't get to see the details of how many, like, tiny kickers he has on his bases because you're kind of far away. But you get to actually learn how to kill that deer as opposed to just know he's there.
Then you get to look at his kickers on his bases.
And touch him, actually.
Yeah. So, that's definitely something to keep in mind because what I noticed on my Texas hunt especially is we had a couple cameras that we put out. I put out when I kind of got – this was a travel to hunt thing – when I got down to the area. And every destination area, basically, if you call the camera was sitting on destination. So every destination camera, I noticed legitimately every buck at least, pretty much like every decent buck, came in into the wind. And I think that's just a product of hunting on public land in late November.
You know what stinks about that is that the gist off doesn't work.
No.
Because not really. They are literally walking with the wind hitting them on the tip of the nose.
Yeah.
Like they're not, you know, we say we go to Illinois and we're like, oh, okay, we're going to hunt just off wind. You know, those deer are going to stick with it. And this is another product of Texas, right? Because they can meander anywhere they want
to. Yeah.
So they don't like walk this, you know, transition line because there's not many of them. Mm-hmm. Instead, they walk right through the woods with the wind on the point of their nose, as opposed to like Illinois, they're going to walk this transition of like brush to fence line, right? And they're going to rather walk that because they can't like go through that fence line because that's where the wind really is, and you can sit on that and shoot them on just off. It just doesn't work on the Texas public.
Yeah, it's very tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're going to walk where the wind's not on the tip of their nose throughout the day, but like when they get close to these places that you can find them and pattern them, they know. It's like in the old cowboy videos, old Western videos, where like, you know, they always are like, all right, we're coming through an ambush point here, you know? It's like they know that set us up bad for them and good for the Indians. And that's where the Indians
we're trying to be
the bucks of the cowboys. That's right. So, you know, that's something to think about. So when you place a camera
on the commanders, we gotta be PC.
When you put it on the destination, the scrape, the corn, whatever, just give yourself some perspective. And also there is a thought that you could definitely put it off of that and figure out some stuff to like where you might hunt 56 yards downwind. The only thing I don't like about that as much is you're only going to learn something on half the winds. The other half, you don't even know if there's a deer coming to the destination.
I'm trying to get better about making a few assumptions using trail cameras. And this actually helped me in Oklahoma quite a bit here a while back. I had a cell camera. Y'all have heard me talk about it. It's been up there for about near a year now and still running. We didn't go change the batteries in it. It's still running. They're real low right now. But yeah.
Greg was supposed to change those.
Was he?
Yeah.
Funny. Did he forget them?
He forgot.
but we were getting deer on camera in the at night, but I knew that there would still be deer in the area. And I think you can do this with trail cameras a lot. Like, say you're getting a buck on a specific trail, but there's a decent amount of deer movement in the area. You're only getting that deer a quarter of the time, maybe less, of that he's actually in the area. So if you got a deer on camera, say like 3 days that have a 10-day period, dude, that deer's all over that place right there.
Yep.
And you just don't get him on camera the whole time. So they don't tell the whole story. And being able to kind of make those inferences kind of can separate you and give you more confidence than what you might would have otherwise if you just look at the verbatim stuff.
You know, another tip or thought I just had that we've talked about before, but while we're thinking about putting the camera on the destination, now in regards to the corn on like private, that's a place that you want to make sure your settings on that camera are done right. You know, you want to make sure that, like for us, we can set all that stuff through the Moultrie mobile app, which is really nice because you just pretty much turn your camera on, leave, and you're not in there hardly any time at all. And then you can set your settings or whatever.
Yeah, you can change it daily, too.
Yeah.
Depending on if you're going to,
Yeah.
If we're not in the country, or that doesn't make any sense if you actually look at use it, you know, correctly. If we're not hunting that area at the moment, you can change it to, you know, upload every couple hours or every day or whatever. But if you're hunting it, it's kind of nice to have up to the minute information.
Yeah, it's nice to know, like, there's deer in the area, right? There's like, they're using this. Like, it's nice to know when you get up in the morning that, man, the pictures from the last evening, there was a lot of deer around. Maybe they're all does, but it's the rut, so why wouldn't I want to hunt where there's a lot of does, you know? So there's that for sure. So you can change settings up to the minute, and usually you want to make sure if you're running on corn that you're not, like, getting a picture every 3 seconds.
Yeah, don't do burst either.
No,
no. It's bad. It's a good way to get a nanny doe with her ear turned just a little bit different for three pictures.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, there's a couple other ways that you can kind of put yourself out of the game to be in the game. You know, and I did this. I've done this a couple times. Once in South Dakota, the first night I discovered that this property was for sure a good property that I ended up shooting that deer on. And then I've done it in Oklahoma some too. But basically, you know, get where you can see up on a hill or something like that. And sometimes you put yourself in a position that is like advantageous to see everything you need to see. But you can't probably, you probably won't kill a deer from where you're sitting.
It's about near an observation sit, which is something I hate.
Yeah. But you can make, you can make moves out of that.
Learning more to do it still. Well, if you can make moves, it's, that's a little different. Our buddy Hunter will literally, because he doesn't like to get up early, like drive up at shooting light and sit in the vehicle and watch a place.
Sounds a lot warmer too.
It does. It's real warm when you spew coffee all over the dash.
That dude will have more optics on the window than the whole vehicle's worth. We were laughing about that. He has this, you know, little car or whatever that he hunts out of, and it's like, man, that dude, he's got that spot and scope is worth more than his vehicle is worth.
Yeah, for sure. So, but so the concept here is to maybe take yourself out of the game for a morning or an evening hunt, as long as you don't have the worry of pressure. But one of the things you can do when you have a car is, like, you can kind of show, hey, there's a dude here, you know, and show that you're the pressure on the place, and maybe people don't go in there. But, like, watch, see the deer movement. Like, for instance, the place he's been hunting, there's, like, no reason for the deer to go left versus right, but they go left every time. And you wouldn't know that if unless you sit way off.
Yeah.
And so from that, you can make inferences to, like, hang on a certain tree or sit up on the ground in a certain place that you wouldn't really know, like map scouting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He and he hunts, it's funny, he doesn't really think he's that patient sometimes, but he hunts way more patient than I do.
Yeah.
And he'll sit there for 3 days watching a property before he actually gets out and gets after it. And he usually ends up getting out there and, you know, shooting one in the back of the head or something, you know. So
oh no.
But he, no, he does. He did shoot one in the shoulder and killed it. So
yeah, that's right.
You know, but he's just real good at kind of making assumptions. He has a really good, he actually has a really good creative way of thinking about things outside the box. I think that just comes from, you know, being isolated in Emory, Texas for his whole life, you know.
You know, one of the funny things about, like, talking to a guy like Hunter is that him and I hunt differently, so a lot of times I think his ideas are dumb. But they work, and I'm learning to, like, hey, maybe that's not dumb. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. It's just not your favorite.
Yeah. It's not the way I want to do it, but that's okay. Is if he has success doing it, and that's good. I probably can learn from some of the ways he does stuff.
Yeah. He's definitely, that kind of thing works. Those observation sits can work. And I'm somewhere in between that and being just bomb in super aggressive. I like to be fairly aggressive, but you know, in South Dakota, I did sit at this draw, and I had options. I like to feel like I might shoot a deer, even if
might
it's
as well
an observation.
Bring your bow, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I like that feeling. So I was on this little draw, or in between two draws, and I knew that if, because I had like a little saddle behind me, I knew that if a deer came up one of those draws, once it got down into the draw, I could dip back, go over the saddle one way or another. It would never see me, and I'd have a shot in these two draws, east and west. And so that's another way that you can kind of put yourself out of the game, but still kind of have a shot there. And then I was able to see what happened that evening. Hey. and basically make those inferences that you're talking about pretty quickly.
Yeah, where you actually, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it was a thing that you would have never known to do until you sat and watched that night.
Yeah.
Right.
What I wanted to do was go in and hunt. There was a cottonwood tree that I could see a trail. It looked like the best trail on the aerial. Mm-hmm. Went right past this thing. And we've done a video on this actually called Landmark Trees. Mm-hmm. And those are a thing where, especially in like a CRP habitat, if there's a tree, it's like, it's a landmark, and the deer use that landmark as they navigate through the CRP. So they're not just lost in the CRP and don't know where they're at. They, mm-hmm. they see that thing and they actually like kind of navigate to it. They're attracted to it, to a sense. That's where scrapes happen a lot of times, mm-hmm. near those trees. So this landmark cottonwood is where I wanted to go, and I actually took in all the sticks and platform and all that thing. Another reason why, you know, cruiser saddles are kind of the thing that we like to hunt out of most times, because you don't feel like you've put in too much work to pull a 13-pound stand in there when you just got a little bitty platform, mm-hmm. and it's like, I don't have to hang in that tree. It's actually probably not the best idea. And I learned from that evening that that tree is actually kind of out of the game, mm-hmm. like fully, not just out of the game to be in mm-hmm. the game. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so the next morning we actually had a different wind that was going to be, I could see from a different angle and bedded a buck, and that evening went in and should have for sure killed him, but messed the shot up. So
yeah, but it was a success when it comes to like the getting close side of things.
Yeah, yeah. See, it was, everything worked out except for that last moment where I was trying mm-hmm. to figure out where he was at through the willows,
so,
I guess.
So I want you to tell me a little bit more about kind of how you've been hunting Oklahoma with the, like, either, you know, being able to hunt two different, I guess, drainages, but maybe can't shoot from where you're sitting type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're out of the game, but you can put yourself in the game real quick. How do you do that?
Saddles, like I talked about earlier, are a big part of this.
So the topographical feature saddle.
Yeah,
so,
not a cruiser saddle.
Not a cruiser saddle. But whenever you're looking at, so say you got your hybrid or your topo lines on X, it's where, like, say you got a ridge. It's a dip in the ridge, right? Mm-hmm. People call it like a lion's back or something, you know, where, you know how a horse, an old horse has got a sway in its back where mm-hmm. the saddle sits.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, let's think about that when you think about what a saddle is.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this is probably more plug than what Onyx should get from us, but if you haven't figured this out yet, they have 3D maps on Onyx that I don't use for the 3D function. I use it because it's like way more detailed mm-hmm. than the regular aerial. So you go to satellite, click 3D, and it's going to like zoom you out and kind of give you like a sideways perspective. Don't worry about that. Zoom back in, and the map is crazy detailed. And it's also like an October map or something. Mm-hmm. So you can see all the trails that happen during deer season. Mm-hmm. It's real handy.
Yeah, it is.
So, back to the saddle thing.
So, again, on Onyx, you can find those saddles if you have spent time. I pretty much always have my hybrid mode on.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see, like, now when I look at a map, there's not a question usually of what I'm looking at
mm-hmm.
topographically. Like, I get it. But at first, it takes some time to get used to that stuff. Well, also, just from a visual perspective, if you can see well, then you know. Like, this is you can see a saddle on that next ridge over or whatever, and you know that if you're making the assumptions about where this deer might end up, there's three, four places where, like, I potentially think I would see a deer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go, well, okay, if he comes up right there, then I can dip over that saddle. And that's the thing, is a saddle is a low spot. So what you end up doing is going through the saddle into the next draw so that deer can't see you. If you don't have that saddle, a lot of times it's hard to get over the top of that ridge into the next draw without being seen mm-hmm. in the main draw or whatever. So that's kind of, that's a good way of looking at it. Also, use the topo as well to look at kind of high spots that you can see, where you can see a lot of the potential finger draws that you think deer will be in that are come into the main draw. So you sit out on one side, have a decent wind, look into lots of other little draws, and the heads of those draws, you can see deer working those draws and potentially make moves on them, which we did on the buck truck episode as well. That was the second time I'd been in Oklahoma. The buck truck episode we did was first part of November in Oklahoma. KC killed a buck. We already kind of talked about that, but I also tell the story of that same scenario that I'm talking about right now, where we were able to see a deer, make moves on him very quickly, and get to where we almost killed him in a matter. I mean, he literally is 500 yards, and then all of a sudden he's 50. And, you know, this is that takes some experience sometimes to make that happen. Sometimes you can just happen into it. But either way, like, you feel like you're out of the game, and then you realize, like, if you're in pretty decent shape, you can get across 500 yards pretty quick.
Is there a clock in your head that stays pretty consistent on that kind of stuff? You know, like, you know, you said, like, you and Michael, like, where's he at? I don't know. I just feel like, in my experience, sometimes they're fast and sometimes they're slow, and it's hard to kind of tell. But there's always this time of, like, man, he should have been here by now. Where is he at?
Yeah.
And, like, half the time when you're feeling that way, he's still.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%, dude. Like, that's a great point. I try to get places as fast as possible when I'm making a move on a deer and get set up in the best place as possible. And then usually it just depends on the habitat and stuff. But if you beat him there, then you need to all of a sudden calm yourself because it could take, like, it could happen for sure quickly. And I've had it happen. It did in that case I was just talking about, like, happened so quick. But the deer knew we were something, you know, so he was making moves, try to get wind on us. But yeah, like, overall, just don't peek up. Don't stick your head up and peek, because you should be able to see him. You feel like by now, cause he's just sitting there. These deer have nothing to do but survive.
That's right.
They have nothing. They don't play, guys. They don't get on their phones. They don't go to work.
Yeah. By the way, they're not playing cat and mouse with you.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. Playing gazelle and cheetah with you, okay? Yeah.
We want to survive. So what do I got to do to make that happen? Eat and not get killed.
Yeah, and breed just a little bit.
Yeah. And that's not even really part of their own survival.
Yeah, well, that way it's the survival of the species.
Species survival.
Yeah. And
it is a...
God made them to where they only do it for like a month and a half of the year because they'd all be dead if they did it all year long.
Yeah, they'd be extinct. Dumb. Yeah. Dodo birds.
You know, you mentioned the deer that I shot in Oklahoma on that buck truck episode. It's pretty cool. The deer was super close, so the footage gets kind of weird because he's so close. But what you can see in that footage is that I hit a limb when I shot, which is weird. It's the second time that's happened to me this year. And it's not a big limb, not like a you ever seen that old blooper from Bill Jordan where he shoots this deer where it's kind of walking and it
which
thuds.
One?
Yeah. And he says, "I think I hit him in the shoulder." And it was on that Real Tree bloopers thing with Jeff Foxworthy. You remember watching that?
Yeah.
And ends up he smokes a tree and that's the thud he heard. Thunk. But anyways, it's not that kind of a limb. It's just a little twig. But you can see it like fall in the footage. And I'm convinced that because I'm shooting a like, not high FOC, but a good FOC setup that's a fairly heavy arrow, I've been able to not purposely do this, but get away with when situations like that happen. Because, like, you know, say, throw me back to, like, 2017 when I'm shooting a 430 grain arrow. Like, that thing is, what, you know, 20% lighter? Like, that's a lot more alteration that can happen whenever you encounter stuff like that. So I'm shooting that Vector HMR at, like, 540 grains. And I think it has helped me in those situations. And that was even with a mechanical.
Yeah. Right?
So, like, I don't know. You know, if it would have hung a blade, it probably would have still messed it up. But the other time I did it was with a fixed. And, you know, with that, you're pretty safe, you know.
And that's the thing, dude, is, like, you don't intend for that stuff to happen. But,
yeah,
dude, how many times have you hunted a place this year that you've seen and set up your tree stand before you actually went in to hunt?
Oh, that was zero times. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, you go, we do so much run and gun, and especially most of it's public land. And so you're in a tree a lot of times in the morning, you hadn't even seen really what your shots are. Mm-mm. And then all of a sudden a deer's coming through and you're like, I think there's a twig there and I think there's one there. Yeah. Who knows what's after 25 yards mm-hmm. there?
Well, guess you know what you do when you aim at a deer? You
pick a spot.
Yeah, you pick a spot, and then like the right way to do it is to put your pin in focus in your eyeball mm-hmm. and your deer's a little fuzzy. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's in between there? Other fuzzy stuff mm-hmm. that you really aren't paying attention to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yep. It's good to A, know your lanes, but B, shoot a setup that you feel confident if something doesn't go optimal, it's still going to work.
Plan B arrow, huh?
Maybe not. Yeah, man, that's funny.
Different kind of plan B. Yeah.
So I have been doing a little bit of the out of the game to be in the game type stuff. This year, I've found pretty good confidence in calling. I've killed a couple deer using grunt calls throughout my hunting career, but recently the rattling antlers have worked really good for me. Now, I think that we're reaching a point in the year where most of the country, the rattling antlers kind of fall off. Mm-hmm. I think like once you get off that back shoulder of like the peak rut, like there's just not as much of that going on. Mm-hmm. There is a case to be made for the second rut type stuff on there, but that's a different subject. But in general, for calling purposes, sometimes you can go to a property or a place you like to hunt or whatever, and the wind be really bad to hunt the general deer movement. However, in calling, you can put some things in your favor to where I did this in Colorado. Excuse me.
Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. That's it. Yeah. Call me in Rada. I've done it in Kansas, done it in Oklahoma, done it in South Dakota even though, you know, we're there in October, it's not the most callable, but they still answer grunt calls. Actually, for sure, answer grunt calls, because I did this all the way back in 2020 whenever I mm-hmm. shot that deer in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. You can set up, if you have confidence in your calling, and the only way to do that is to use your calls, you can set up in a place that maybe isn't in the primary deer travel corridor. You know, in Kansas, when I killed that buck, I was probably 200 yards off the major deer travel area, and this buck was actually 500 yards from us whenever I called at him. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Brought him to 30, right? But let me say, we were on the ground and made moves to make that shot happen. He probably would have never got 30 yards from where we were sitting. Y'all have heard that story already. But the point is, if you are comfortable and confident in your calling abilities and have used them on deer and kind of know how deer react to certain calls and such, you can probably set up out of the zone. Mm-hmm. But bring deer into the zone. Mm-hmm. Like, so, for instance, in Colorado, it's a little different. We were setting up in a tree there, and I would say the major deer travel path was at like 60 yards, which I'm going to try to not shoot 60 yards. Mm-hmm. If he's about 260 inches, I'm probably going to shoot 60 yards, just so you know. But
he's 160 on that.
I like to shoot him under 20 for sure. It's a yeah, lot of fun when you is. Know they're going to die. So, knowing that, I know that I can call to a deer who's maybe 100 yards away and bring him off of the trail because he wants to go see what that is. He wants to, especially you hunt in an area that doesn't have a high deer density mm-hmm. or an area that, like, they're competing for does pretty heavily. Or even some bucks just have this mentality of, I'm going to go whoop that thing. Mm-hmm. And some of them don't. But if you find a buck that's like that, you can bring him to the base of your tree, and he'll bust through brush to get there sometimes. Mm-hmm. So there is this aspect, doesn't always work as well, but you can take yourself out of the game because of a wind direction, or maybe even, I wouldn't say do this, but you could hunt in a tree that's like a nice tree to hang in, but isn't like the best spot, and know you can call deer to you. Mm-hmm.
I have a thought about this too. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2019. I spent some time on a little 80-acre piece that you know up in Kansas, and it's just a permission piece. And basically, it's a cornfield that backs up to like some awesome CRP. And there were does coming out of that CRP every night, mm-hmm. and usually a decent buck around. I go over there and I'm hunting, and I'm having to hunt like probably 100 yards from that CRP in like this little kind of couple of cottonwoods that's out in the cornfield.
It's just an overgrown ditch is about all
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm having to, like, call to these deer. I can't get shots to them, plain and simple. Well, this buck comes out. He's a nice buck. And I actually had this happen a couple times, all the way through, like, end of December probably. But closer to the rut, I had a nice 10, probably 140-inch 10-point. And he comes out. He's nosing does around. Well, I start, like, hitting him with some grunts, and he kind of acted like he noticed, but then he kind of would just go around and nose and does, and I wasn't for sure if he was hearing me or not. Well, and then I hit him with some super loud, you know. I couldn't tell if he was hearing it or not. He just wasn't paying much attention. Mm-hmm. And so I did something. I don't know if I moved or if I grabbed a GoPro and turned it on or off or something, kind of broke my attention on him. And next thing I know, he's like gone. And I didn't really see where he went. And I'm like, start looking around. Like 3 or 4 minutes later, I look behind me, and this dude is like about near running at me from behind. And I'm like, dadgummit. So I make my move to the other side of this little brush, and I'm going to get it drawn on him. And long story short, miss him. Mm-hmm. I sound like the worst archer in the world on this episode, don't I?
You learn more from your misses than you do your kills. So that's why we talk about the misses a lot.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Like your failures teach you probably more than your successes, because when you're successful, you have this pride element where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah,
man.
I did it, man.
That good.
Yeah. I overlook all that dumb stuff I did because I killed him.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a pretty good hunter. You're right. Yeah. I am pretty good.
Yeah.
Then later on, like a couple weeks later, I'm hunting the same property and have the same thing happen. And then eventually end up this deer. And what I'm getting to is bucks, when there's does around, especially, and you're grunting at them, they will sometimes act like they don't hear you,
mm-hmm.
but they hear you most of the time. Mm-hmm. They can hear those grunts from a long ways. And so if you see a deer that acts like he's not hearing you, it's just like when I showed that deer the heads up decoy in Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
he acted like he didn't really see us. Like he looked at us, for sure saw us, and then he was like, oh, I'm just going to nibble on this willow tree here and then just stand here and just kind of like, what are you doing? What is mm-hmm. this buck doing? I don't have a clue. He's just standing there. There's does down there. I can't see them, but they're down there in the bottom with him.
Mm-hmm.
He sees us. He doesn't know what to do. He's thinking. It's weird. It's mm-hmm. weird. Like, but the deer is like, I think he's processing. And so I guess my point is, when you go to call and stuff here in late November and on into early December, just keep in mind that, you know, if a deer's ear moves when you call, he probably heard you.
Mm-hmm.
And he may not look at you, but you don't have to sit there and get louder and louder, and you don't have to rattle because you don't think he heard your grunt, and you can rattle louder. Just, you know, you might just try to think about like being a little more subtle. And it's the same deal with like when you make a move on a deer in the ground, how long, you know, is your internal clock mm-hmm. before you have to peek up and then you get caught peeking. It's the same deal. Don't get all unnatural just because you're not sure if you heard you or not. Mm-hmm. If you can still see him, if he's still hanging around right there,
yep.
then he's probably thinking about it.
I think too, that natural thing's a big deal. Mm-hmm. I've really changed the way I use grunt calls. Cause I think the common thing is to go,
that's what we heard on Texas Public.
Yeah. Yep. That's what people do. But if you ever hear a deer grunting in the woods, it's not that. Every once in a while, they'll go, bah, and like make a loud grunt.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, especially if they were the doe, they're going, bah, 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 bah. They're like saying sentences to that girl. They're whispering to yeah. her, right? So I think that in that situation, I've seen Rod White do this,
mm-hmm.
Where he's got a buck with a doe. He wants to kill that buck, and the buck's acting like it's not responding. Well, Rod doesn't just keep getting louder. He instead starts talking deer to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The deer goes off for 10 minutes, comes back to investigate later.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of times, and I did this in Colorado, I called not to kill the deer right then, but I called to just pique his interest because they remember stuff.
Oh, yeah, dude.
They know.
They got nothing else to do.
That's right. They want to know where every deer is yep. in their general area. And when they hear, like for instance, in Colorado, we rattled a buck in. the buck just so happened to see a red panda in a tree. but we rattled at him when he's at 200 yards, or probably 300 yards. I know he hears it because it's quiet, you know. And but I stop. I don't just keep on going until he shows up, right? But I rattle, and I know he's going to end up showing up. And what happens 15 minutes later, I see him while I'm glassing at 80 yards. So there's this thing you can do where you make a natural sound that tells a deer, hey, there's a deer over there. And if that, unless that doe is in standing estrus wanting to get bred, there's a real good chance that he's going to come check you out in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I would say don't do the progressively more aggressive calling until you get a response. But there is a sense of like you made audio contact with this deer. Mm-hmm. Maybe continue to sound like a deer in a deer situation. Mm-hmm. Like especially whenever I've seen bucks kind of running does. Like, say it's like a little rut fest, which is what we call, like, when a buck, like, busts up in some does and, like, starts nosing them, right?
Yeah.
He'll go, brek, brek, and then when they start running off, you know, almost like a feeding call.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, you know, it's the same concept for those of you that did that duck hunt. Like, if you're just messing with your buddies in the blind or whatever, and all of a sudden a group of mallards buzzes you, and you're like, oh, get down, you know, you're like, you don't hit them with the loudest hail call ever, right? You give them a little feed call because they're close, right? And that's natural. And, you know, they've already seen you. And so there's no reason to do a competition hail call with 17 notes in it, you know? But, you know, that's the same concept with deer. Just think about it that way. It's like, man, how can I sound natural? And just pique this dude's interest because, like I said, they got nothing else to do. They will come back.
They are good at living,
they
man.
Are.
Then they do not cut you any slack.
They live in their elements.
That's it. They live in the elements out there. Okay. So that's like that buck that we spooked in Colorado. Like, as soon as he, it didn't matter how natural I sounded, what I gave him, as soon as he realized he didn't like that tree wiggling over there, he was outie. And we're talking about tail tucked type outie.
It's crazy because they can't see red, right? And somehow they did.
Well, he was covered in a bunch of other colors that they see real well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, I'm not trying to harp on old Eric too bad. He does a real good job videoing. But
he does.
It's just the nature of the beast when you start filming your hunts. Like, I've spooked a deer or two this year as well, I'm sure. I can't really think of a time, but I have, I bet. I ain't gonna tell you how
remember
many
the boot spook when we gave you the boot scooting buggy in Kansas? We gave you that song.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a thing for sure. Yeah, definitely didn't kill him.
Just got to keep you honest, man.
Yeah. But,
dude, that was the funniest dance ever. KZ started dancing. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, the boot spooking buggy, baby.
Boot spooking buggy.
Well,
man.
Guys, reduce your boot spooking as much as you can this year. All right, that's going to be the best way for you to kill deer. But remember that you can take yourself out of the game, but it's actually still putting you in the game. And one of the other things you can do right now to take yourself out of the game, to put you in the game, is just concentrate on Thanksgiving and being with your family. Like, give them the time they deserve. Don't be so selfish that you want to be out in the woods the whole time and be a grumpus or whatever whenever you need to be, you know, participating in family stuff, and truly be thankful and know who you're thankful to. I can't tell you how many times I see people like, blessed, thankful. Okay, well, who do you direct these Thanksgivings to? Who are you blessed by? Are you
thinking
about that much?
Man.
Yeah,
good
it's put it out in the universe, you know, crystals and all that stuff. Stay far away from that stuff, guys, because we got a creator and he is blessing us, has blessed us with his son. And we have a lot of stuff to be thankful for. Thankful for these deer, thankful for this creation, thankful for our families, and we're thankful for y'all, you know, we got some big opportunities in life because of y'all, and I can't tell you how cool that is. If you've been around since the old Briar Tuck days, you know, all that stuff, burning brownie points, all that, you know, like you the real deal,
man,
okay?
You somehow, I don't know, if you relate to that stuff, then you either were just young at the time or just an idiot.
Yeah.
Because we were idiots,
we
for
were,
sure.
Still are, actually. But anyways, thank y'all for riding through all this stuff with us and being loyal listeners to what we do. Y'all keep us honest. Make sure we're not being stupid every once in a while or any time. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.